Here we go. I am Jeff K. This is the Jeff K. Show. We're broadcasting once again from deep, deep underneath a nondescript home in suburban Pennsylvania. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thanks for finding us. Thanks for listening and all that stuff. You guys are the best, and I mean it. Yeah, before we get started today, I want to tell you about something that happened last night that I found mildly amusing. Tony and I went out, and clearly somebody was having, on our street here, just up the block, somebody was having some sort of a big throwdown, some kind of a big party, the mother of all parties, you know, possibly even a soiree, you know, it's unclear, but there were cars everywhere, parked halfway up the hill, some this direction, some that direction. They were parked on both sides of the street, so it was hard to drive. It was like only about 110% of a standard car width, you know, to pass through. You had to thread the needle to drive up our street. So somebody was having some kind of a shindig, and we drove through that. And when we turned the corner, there was a we saw that there was an ambulance parked there with two guys in it, and just sitting there parked, you know. And I was thinking, now that's a party, you know, when you have medical personnel on standby, possibly on retainer, you know. It's not if, it's when shit goes south, that there's some kind of alcohol-fueled insanity that's going to happen, you know, at some point during the evening. So you have these guys outside just on standby waiting for it to happen. They can just, like, put down their, like, you know, sausage McMuffins and go running. And maybe, like, put out the fire, possibly, you know, assess the damage, pack the wounds, you know. Yeah, so I thought that was pretty good. That's a sign of a good party right there. When you have an ambulance parked around the corner just waiting, you know. I thought that was a pretty good sign. The fact that we weren't invited, it doesn't surprise me. And it doesn't bother me. I don't even know. Maybe it was a bunch of family members. I don't know. Whatever. I'm not very neighborly. In fact, I'd say I'm almost not neighborly at all. About the most you're going to get out of me is, hey, how you doing there? You know, it doesn't go. That's where it begins and ends with me. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a lot, you know. Might raise my hand, say, hey there, you know. So, in fact, if any of my neighbors, with the exception of a couple that I don't like, for some reason those take hold in my brain. Those are the ones that I latch onto, the ones I don't like. You know, they fall in a different category. But if most of my neighbors were to come up on the front porch, knock on our front door, and I'd probably go out there and go, could I help you? They'd say, I've been living next door to you for the last 18 years. Oh, yeah, I think I've seen you around. I think that's pretty much, that's not an exaggeration. That's literally the way it might go. I mean, the guy that lives next door to us, I don't know him. I mean, I don't know if he knocked on, like I said, if he knocked on the door, I wouldn't know him. I know his wife, because she's always out there puttering around, planting stuff with the, you know, out there pulling weeds and all that stuff. I've said, hey, to her a couple times, so I might know her. But anyway, I wouldn't know, you know, I don't know any of these neighbors. The fact that we didn't get invited to the big soiree, that doesn't surprise me, and it's good. I don't need another obligation. You know, whenever we get invited to something, I'm like, oh, God, are you serious? We have to go somewhere at a specific time? Oh, God. And they're going to, you know, have to talk to people? Oh, man. I was hoping to enjoy the weekend, you know? Now I got to talk to people? Oh, God. So anyway, that happened. Also, I was wondering if you guys had any luck with the big Black Friday shopping extravaganza. I don't do that. I look at the ads because I'm usually in the markup for something for myself. I mean, we're not talking about gift-giving. I mean, come on. I'm talking about buying something for myself, you know? There's a couple things I'm looking for right now. I'm looking for a new desktop computer, just the tower, or maybe just the whole freaking system if I can get a good deal on it. But I definitely need a new tower. I've complained about this before, and I don't want to bore you, but I bought this new desk. Well, I bought a tower from Staples. It was a great deal. It had all the specs I was looking for. You know, very, very specific about it has to have this much RAM. It has to have this kind of processor. It has to have this much disk space. So I had these. And I went against it. I shot by price. I went and bought bought a processor that I didn't want. And Tony's like, what the hell? What kind of weirdo even knows what kind of processor? I mean, what is, you know, she's making fun of me. But I ended up buying a tower that it had the minimum number of, you know, amount of RAM in it, and it had a 1 terabyte hard drive, but the processor was, I skimped on the processor because of price, and now I'm paying for it. The thing is a piece of shit, you know. It needs to be, I feel like taking it out in the middle of the road and just running over it, you know. It's like running over the thing, backing up and running over it again. It is so frustrating. The other day I came home from work and I came down here, you know, and I turn the computer off when I leave because the thing overheats like a 1940s radio, like it's got tubes in it, you know. You got to wait for that thing to warm up, you know. So the thing, I come down here into the subterranean bunker and the computer's on. I'm like, I'm almost certain I turned it off because I've gotten into the habit of doing it. So the thing's on. It won't come out of sleep mode because it's been on all day and it's overheated. I mean, what kind of piece of shit is this? So I turned it off. Oh, I couldn't turn it off in the normal way. I couldn't go to the start button and hit, you know, log off or whatever. I had to, like, just hold down on the power button until it powered down, you know. So I turned it off. About an hour later, I came back in here. It was on again. So the thing won't stay dead, you know? It comes back from the dead like a zombie. Like a goddamn zombie, you know? So it's like the undead. Which, by the way, the undead, what is that phrase? All of us are undead, right? Anyway, it comes back. It fights its way back from the dead. And turns itself on, you know, just, and then it overheats because it's sitting running. So anyway, I've never had, I had a Dell, my previous computer. I probably had it for 7 or 8 years. It was a Dell, never turned it off. You know, every once in a while I'd reboot it, you know, maybe like once a week I'd reboot the thing, you know, never turned it off, never had an issue with it. Thing was fantastic. This thing, if you leave it on for a few hours, it'll overheat, it'll go into sleep mode and won't come out, you know. So anyway, this thing, and it crashes, you know, in addition to that. So I'll be sitting here, you know, looking at something super important. Maybe the, you know, who knows? Something super important. And thing will just completely crash, you know. They'll make that loud buzzing noise, and then the frowny face, the sideways frowny face comes up there. You know what I'm saying? So the thing crashes, it goes into sleep, it won't come out, it overheats. Thing is a piece of shit. And it makes me insane. So I need a new computer. So I'm in the market for that. But that's not something I can just jump into all willy-nilly. Also, I need a new stereo. You know, something like I'm talking just like a shelf stereo that plays single CDs, you know. Both of those things seem to be like fairly old fashioned at this point. Do people just use laptops now? People don't use desktops at all? Because you look at ads and you go in stores and there's like almost none. there's no stereos, like stereos that I think, you know, there's nothing. So, anyway, I've been on the lookout for both those things, but I can't just jump in all willy nilly. I have to do a lot of research. Maybe it might involve like a whiteboard, spreadsheets, you know, have to open up Excel, you know, maybe create a pivot table, maybe even employ the use of multicolored like index cards, you know. So it's a whole long process that you have to go through until you finally buy something. See, I made the mistake with this desktop of cutting corners, and look what it got me. It got me nothing but heartache. Oh God. So anyway, that's happening. But I haven't bought anything. I will tell you this though. We did buy something. It was all initiated and orchestrated by Tony. She asked me about, you know, we've been talking about going back to Myrtle Beach in the spring, but just the two of us, the kids, they don't know about it, but they won't be joining us this time, you know? So, it'll just be the two of us. So, you know, we've been talking about it off and on. And she got some kind of ad. I don't know if it was an Instagram email. I don't know where she found out about it. But there's this motel. Well, the way Myrtle Beach is set up, there's this road, like a four-way. It's like two lanes in one direction, two lanes in the other direction. Big, high-traffic road that runs parallel to the ocean. And it's imaginatively called Ocean Boulevard. So between Ocean Boulevard and the ocean itself, there's this line of high dollar, you know, high rise, fancy pants hotels that face the ocean. I mean, they're literally on the ocean. That's where we stayed in one of those last time. It was called Paradise Resorts. Fantastic. And so that's on the ocean side of Ocean Boulevard. There's like, you know, these are pretty high end. You know, they're kind of family oriented, but they're fairly high end. These are kind of, you know, fairly luxury accommodations. On the other side of Ocean Boulevard is a bunch of like old motels. You know, instead of hotels, these are motels. You know, and some of them are built in. It looks like they've been built. They were built in like maybe the late 50s, early 60s, you know, funky looking places, which are cool. I mean, I love that kind of stuff. I love that old, you know, it's like real garish colors, and you could just tell it's straight out of 1962, you know. I love that kind of stuff. But most of them are okay, halfway decent. Still, I wouldn't want to stay there. You know, it looks like I've been burned by those kind of places before. And, you know, they look kind of cool on the outside, but, you know, I wouldn't trust it. And then some of them are just straight up, I don't know what's going on. Looks like there might be some drug activity going on in there. You know, maybe some kind of a whore operation, you know, being underway in there. So some of them are just shitholes. Most of them are halfway decent, but still kind of scary. But there's a thing that's happening, and they call it doo-wop, which is kind of cutesy in my... I don't like that. It's this movement where these people are going in and buying up these old vintage motels and refurbishing them, bringing them up to a modern code or whatever, but retaining the old coolness of the 60s, you know. So there's a place in New Jersey, Wildwood, I think, where the whole town, I haven't been there, but I've read about it, where there's like dozens of these kinds of motels, and the whole place is refurbished, you know. And so that's starting to happen in Myrtle Beach. So there's this one that I saw it when we were down there. Somebody poured millions of dollars into this place. Was built in 1963, and they just finished refurbishing all the rooms in it, and the outside and the pool and everything. It looks cool as hell, you know. It looks like 1963, but it looks brand new. You know, it doesn't look weathered and beaten down, and you know. So and they put in all the rooms are all brand new, all refurbished, everything's new. So so anyway, they were having a 1 day Black Friday sale, and 40% off all rates for 1 day only. You know, Tony said, why don't we think about, what do you think about maybe it's like booking this thing? I said, let's do it. You know, that was my input on that deal. That's what I always say, though. I mean, you know, I'm always, yeah, let's just do it. You know, she's the voice of reason. But so she went online, booked a week, early April. So we're going to go, apparently. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, I like that kind of stuff. Well, it'll be different than our last day. But, you know, that's the only thing. That's our only Black Friday purchase. Today, I thought I would tell you guys briefly. I'm already deep into this thing. Deep into this. God, knock it off with that. I was going to tell you about how we moved from, I told you once before about how I moved from, you know, the circumstances surrounding my move from West Virginia to North Carolina, and then the circumstances surrounding my move from North Carolina to Atlanta. Thought I'd do, this is going to be a quickie, because we don't have much time, but how, you know, the circumstances surrounding my move from Atlanta to Los Angeles, that one was, you know, the other two I would say were successful endeavors, you know. It turned out great. The one to California, not so clear a win. You know, that one is the one that we think back on and think, well, that was probably a mistake. You know, but I'll tell you, I was working at WEA Atlanta. WEA is Warner Electro Atlantic. Back when I started there, there were six major record labels, you know, conglomerates in the United States, and WEA had 40% of the market. So one company had 40% of the entire market. They dominated. They were the biggest record company in the world. It was fun. It was like 6 years of just, the job itself was often stressful and I didn't like it all the time. But the fringe benefit, also it didn't pay very well. I'm gonna have to add that. So the job itself was not the greatest. You know, it was very, very stressful. Didn't pay very well, but the fringe benefits, now that, they were you couldn't get any more. If you're into music, which I was and am, there's no better situation to be in than that. You know, I got to go to any concert I wanted to go to. I got CDs, you know, free CDs just of everything that came out, basically. Got to go to, like, parties that were closed to the public with recording artists. I got to go into like recording studios with artists while they're recording. I mean, it was awesome. It was like the best thing ever. I got to travel, and they'd book, you know, like limos. You know, I rode around in limousines. You know, and I'd go to these conventions, and every year they had a convention in a different city, and the last night they would have. Excuse me. Last night they would have some big name recording artist perform. They had all kinds of music every night, but the last night was like a big throwdown, and they always had some big name. And the first one I went to was in San Francisco, and Iggy Pop played the final night, which was insane. It was like in this fancy hotel, and he's out there just like flailing and, you know, just screaming and jumping around. It was great. He had his shirt ripped, you know, his shirt was off, and he was like a rabid dog, you know. The amps were cranked up as high as they would go. People were running for the exits, but I wasn't. I was right up front, mister. This is frickin' Iggy, you know. I was like, holy shit, you know. And then other ones were like Rod Stewart, Prince. I mean, they had some big names come through there, and they played for us. So that was a great job. It I mean, it was just, it was unbelievable. I had great seats to, like, the biggest shows. Didn't pay a goddamn penny for any of them. So anyway, so that was like a dream come true job. And that was about 6 years. One day I went to work, and the operations manager called me down to his office, and he goes, you're going to get a call later. Can't tell you what it's about or who it's from, but somebody's going to call you. I'm like, okay. And, you know, just give it some thought, you know, just what they say. I can't tell you what they're going to say. It's like, I'm not really connecting the dots on this deal, but he's like, I can't tell you anything about it. But, you know, you're going to get a phone call. It's, you know, it's an important, like, all right. So, you know, there's a lot of value to this conversation. But so I went back to my desk. I called Tony, and she was like, what the hell is this? I said, I don't know. Apparently something major is getting ready to happen. So later that day, one of those mythological creatures I told you about before, these guys, their names just appear on memos. You don't really know who they are. You're not even sure that they're real human beings. They're just like people at the home office, you know, that strike fear in the hearts of everybody out in the field, you know. So I got this call from one of those mythological creatures. His name was Vinny. His name is Vinny Campisi, as a matter of fact. And this was back when fax machines probably cost like $10,000. We had one in the whole building. It was a big building. Hundreds of people worked there. Had one fax machine. And the directory was taped to the wall, and it had everybody's fax numbers, you know, and, you know, all the important people. And it said Vinny Campisi on there, and somebody wrote in pencil beside his name, in a white clam sauce. I always remember that. That's funny. So he calls me directly. I don't think I've ever talked to this guy, you know. I mean, I've been on conference calls with him, and but I don't think I've ever discussed anything one-on-one with him. Because, you know, he'd go through my boss. He wouldn't go to me. But anyway, so he calls me direct. He goes, listen, Jeff, one of my guys turned in his notice. He'll be leaving the company soon. And I was wondering if you'd be interested in maybe, you know, interviewing to replace him. I was like, what? And I said, move to California? He goes, and he laughed, and he goes, I can remember when that used to be a positive. You know, but I was like, oh, I said, well, you know, he goes, well, we'll fly you and your wife out, you know, show you around, we'll put you up in a hotel, take you out to dinner, show you around so you can see the area. You know, we can do an interview in my office, and, you know, and then you can go back and, you know, we'll make the decision. I was like, okay. My mind's like, you know, like running 1,000 miles a minute, like move to California. That's never been a consideration, you know. I've been to San Francisco a few times. I don't know if I'd ever been to Los Angeles, to tell you the truth. Maybe once. But so anyway, I called Tony, and she's like, I don't know about this. You know, we were highly skeptical. We weren't like sold on Atlanta anymore. The place was kind of getting to us. The traffic and we bought a house that was so far out. This is our fault. I mean, you can't blame Atlanta for this. We bought a house so far out of downtown. It may as well have been like in South Carolina, you know? I mean, we had a giant commute, which we built that commute. So it's our fault. But anyway, it was like crime ridden, you know, it was just packed with people all the time. We were getting sick of it. I mean, there's all big cities have a bunch of nonsense, but Atlanta seemed to have an inordinate amount of nonsense. So the door was open. It was ajar, you know, to the possibility. So we talked about it. Of course, we decided we'd go out there and at least go through the process, see what he had to say, you know. We didn't know how many other people he was going to interview. So we thought, well, at the very least, we can get a free vacation out of it, you know. Before we left, I found out that it was between me and another guy. The guy that did my exact job in the Philadelphia branch. So I had insider, you know, I had people on the inside feeding me information. You know, it was, but the only two people they were considering was me and the guy in Philly, you know. And so that instantly, you know, something kicked in. I'm like, I gotta beat this guy. Even though I don't want the job, I can't let this guy beat me. I mean, there's no frickin' way. So the competition kicked in, and I didn't even, you know, I mean, I wasn't super excited about it, but the competition, whatever, the switch was flipped. I gotta beat this guy. So we went out there. They put us up in the Universal Hilton, took us out to fancy, you know, restaurants. Vinny showed me around, invited me out to his house. His wife was like super nice. Everybody was like super nice to us. And I was in his office just, you know, shooting the shit. We were just like joking around, talking and stuff. Found out after the fact that that was the interview. I didn't even realize. I'm not even kidding. I didn't even realize I was being interviewed. I thought we were just talking. I was like laughing. I was making jokes, and that probably helped me, as a matter of fact, you know. And, you know, every once in a while we'd see the other guy, the Philadelphia guy, who was a great guy. I knew him. He was, you know, I have nothing bad to say about him. He was a nice guy. So he and his wife were there too, and we'd run into. They were staying in the same hotel, so there was like this tension. You know, he probably had the same. I'm this Atlanta asshole. I cannot allow him to beat me. You know, I'm sure he was thinking the same thing. So we'd pass each other in the lobby sometime of the hotel, just give each other the, yeah, sup, you know, what's up, you know, one of the, just do that chin lift thing, hey, so what's up, you know. But so they were wine and dining them too, not at the same time, you know, separately. So we were both out there at the same time, run into each other in the lobby of the hotel. So we went back to Atlanta, you know, after this fantasy 3 or 4 days fantasy, and a couple days later called and said I had the job if I wanted it, and they made me an offer. And I was like, oh God, you know, now what, you know. I felt like saying, well, I won, so now I can just let him take the job. But I want everybody to know that I was the first choice, you know. But we ended up going, of course. They stuck us, you know, I was in the Universal Hilton. As soon as I signed on the dotted line, I had to go out there for like a month of training. They stuck me in this place. Speaking of funky old motels, they put me in this place called the Safari Inn, which was, it looks cool as hell. In fact, it was used in, what's that movie, True Romance, you know? There was like pivotal scenes in that thing, True Romance. You know, it's like, it looks cool as hell. It's called the Safari Inn. It's on Olive Avenue in Burbank. Place looks cool from the road. Kind of a shithole, you know, in reality. Not a place you want to live or stay in. No, I mean, I don't know how it is now. Maybe they fixed it up, but back then it was not good. So that was kind of a, you talk about it coming down a few notches. As soon as I signed on the dotted line, Safari Inn, you know. Universal Hilton, no, that's a non-starter. Your ass is going in the Safari Inn. So I stayed there and did some training. And then we lived in this place called the Oakwood, which is this, it's like these apartments that you could rent by the month. And it was like fairly high end. It was a corporate thing where a lot of the people that lived in there were actors, you know, like up and coming actors trying to make it, or they were out there like in some kind of like, you know, I don't know what they call it. You know, when you come out there for, what's the word? I get the dementia, you know? Anyway, so it's a bunch of actors and models and musicians. Some corporate people stay there. It's apartments, but it's for, it's more of a corporate type thing. The studios all pay for people to stay there. So that was a bizarre thing. Tony and I stayed there with our little baby. We had a little kid at that point who is now 22. We stayed in that Oakwood for a couple months, and there was like pools everywhere. There's all these, like, you know, beautiful people hanging out. It looked like every stereotype of California that you can think of, it was there. That was it. It was the exact, that is what you think. When you think of Southern California, what you would think of was actually happening in that place. And there was a sign on the gate when you're leaving in the morning. It said, or whenever you leave, it says, "Smile, it's showtime." So that was very bizarre too. So we lived there for a couple months and bought a house out in the burbs again. It wasn't a very good. It was expensive to live out there. It was hot. Didn't like the job very well. The job, Vinny was awesome. I had no issue with him. He was like a great boss. But the job was meetings to prepare for meetings. You know, there was like all these buildings all around Burbank that had like nicknames. Well, you know, we'll be going. We got a 2 o'clock over at the glass building. And then a 3:30 at Sony, and then the Dick Building. There was literally a building called the Dick Building. I think it was spelled D-I-C or something. I don't know what who the hell knows. So anyway, we had meetings all the time, all over Burbank, all within walking distance. So you just walk, you know. And so then at the end of the night, or at the end of the work day, which was all wasted on meetings, you'd have to go back to your office and finish your actual work. So I was working till 8 to 9 o'clock, you know, got a big raise, but it was, you know, the cost of living ate it all up. So I still wasn't, you know, we still weren't. So that it was hot, you know, God, I didn't enjoy any of it. So that was probably a mistake. You know, one of the ones that we think back on, and that's a fork in the road we probably shouldn't have taken, you know. But we did, and it led to northeastern Pennsylvania. You know, it was a gateway drug to northeastern Pennsylvania. So, by the way, when I left L.A. and moved here, my friend Mark said, I told him I was going to go to the Scranton area. He goes, there's many people in Hollywood who dream of making it big in rural Pennsylvania. But few have the guts to try it, you know? I gotta remember him saying that. Hilarious. So anyway, that's how we moved out there. I could tell you more about it, but I'm all out of time. In fact, I'm over time. I hope you guys enjoyed this trip down memory lane. How lame is that? God. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this one. If you guys want to double up on these Jeff K shows, just head on over to patreon.com/Jeff K. That's patreon.com/Jeff K. Sign up for a $4 or more monthly patronage. That's a monthly donation. Stick it on a credit card. Comes out at the first of every month. Then you'll gain access to the Thursday shows. There's a Thursday show every week, just like these Monday shows. But they're only available to patrons at patreon.com/Jeff K. So if you want to tap into that, if you want to double the number of Jeff K shows that you receive every week or you hear every week, it's easy to do. It only costs $4 a month or more. Don't get hung up on that $4. It can be, you know, pay close attention to that phrase, or more. It can be $4 or it can be $750 a month, whatever, you know, whatever makes you comfortable. Just sign up today. You'll instantly gain access to all the shows that have been previously recorded, and you'll instantly gain access to the new ones as they're released. So do it today. You know, why not? Holy mackerel. Can you imagine the value? All right. Hope you guys have a great week. I will be back on Thursday over at Patreon, and you guys have a great one. I'll see ya. Bye. Today, I thought I would tell you guys briefly. I'm already deep into this thing. God, knock it off with that.